When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out of bed he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. He was endeavouring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighbouring church struck the four quarters. So he listened for the hour. To his great astonishment, the heavy bell went on from 6 to 7, and from 7 to 8, and regularly up to 12, and then stopped. 12? It was past 2 when he went to bed. The clock was wrong. An icicle must have got into the works. 12.
"Why, it isn't possible," said Scrooge, "that I can have slept through a whole day and far into another night. It isn't possible that anything has happened to the sun, and this is 12 at noon."
The idea being an alarming one, he scrambled out of bed and groped his way to the window. He was obliged to rub the frost off with the sleeve of his dressing gown before he could see anything, and he could see very little then. All he could make out was that it was still very foggy and extremely cold, and there was no noise of people running to and fro and making a great stir, as there unquestionably would have been if night had beaten off bright day and taken possession of the world. Scrooge went to bed again, and thought, and thought, and thought it over and over and over, and could make nothing of it. The more he thought, the more perplexed he was, and the more he endeavoured not to think, the more he thought. Marley's ghost bothered him exceedingly. Every time he resolved within himself, after mature inquiry, that it was all a dream, his mind flew back again like a strong spring released to its first position, and presented the same problem to be worked all through.
Was it a dream or not?
Scrooge lay in this state until he remembered, on a sudden, that the ghost had warned him of a visitation when the bell tolled 1. He resolved to lie awake until the hour was past. The quarter was so long that he was more than once convinced he must have sunk into a doze unconsciously and missed the clock. At length it broke upon his listening ear. Ding dong.
"A quarter past," said Scrooge, counting.
"Ding dong."
"Half past." "Ding dong." "A quarter to it." "Ding dong." "The hour itself," said Scrooge triumphantly. "And nothing else."
He spoke before the hour bell sounded, which it now did with a deep, dull, hollow, melancholy 1. Light flashed up in the room upon the instant, and the curtains of his bed were drawn. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside, I tell you, by a hand, and Scrooge, starting up, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. The arms were very long and muscular, the hands the same, as if its hold were of uncommon strength. Its legs and feet, most delicately formed, were, like those upper members, bare. It wore a tunic of the purest white, and round its waist was bound a lustrous belt, the sheen of which was beautiful. It held a branch of fresh green holly in its hand, and in a singular contradiction of that wintry emblem, had its dress trimmed with summer flowers. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light, by which all this was visible, and which was doubtless the occasion of its using, in its duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which it now held under its arm.
"Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?"
"I am."
"Who and what are you?"
"I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?"
inquired Scrooge, observant of its dwarfish stature. No, your past. Scrooge then made bold to inquire what business brought him there. Your welfare.
Scrooge expressed himself much obliged, but could not help thinking that the night of unbroken rest would have been more conducive to that end. The spirit must have heard him thinking, for it said immediately,
Your reclamation, then. Take heed.
It put out its strong hand as it spoke, and clasped him gently by the arm.
Rise and walk with me.
The grasp, though gentle as a woman's hand, was not to be resisted. Scrooge rose, but finding that the spirit made towards the window, clasped his robe in supplication.
I'm a mortal and liable to fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand there, said the spirit, laying it upon Scrooge's heart, and you shall be upheld in more than this.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road, with fields on either hand. The city had entirely vanished. The darkness and the mist had vanished with it, for it was a clear, cold, wintry day, with snow upon the ground.
Good heaven, said Scrooge, clasping his hands together as he looked about him. I was bred in this place. I was a boy here.
The spirit gazed upon him mildly. Scrooge was conscious of a thousand odours floating in the air, each one connected with a thousand thoughts and hopes and joys and cares long, long forgotten.
Your lip is trembling, and what is that upon your cheek?
Scrooge muttered with an unusual catching in his voice that it was a pimple, and begged the ghost to lead him where he would.
You recollect the way?
Remember it? I could walk it blindfold.
Strange to have forgotten it for so many years. Let us go on.
They walked along the road, Scrooge recognizing every gate and post and tree, until a little market town appeared in the distance, with its bridge, its church, and winding river. Some shaggy ponies now were seen trotting towards them, with boys upon their backs, who called to other boys in country gigs and carts driven by farmers. All these boys were in great spirits and shouted to each other, until the broad fields were so full of merry music that the crisp air laughed to hear it.
These are but shadows of the things that have been. They have no consciousness of us.
The jocund travellers came on, and as they came, Scrooge knew and named them every one. Why was he rejoiced beyond all bounds to see them? Why did his cold eye glisten and his heart leap as they went past? Why was he filled with gladness when he heard them give each other Merry Christmas as they parted at the crossroads and byways for their several homes? What was Merry Christmas to Scrooge? Out upon Merry Christmas! What good had it ever done to him?
The school is not quite deserted. A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still.
Scrooge said he knew it,
and he sobbed.
They left the high road and soon approached a mansion of dull red brick, with a little cupola on the roof and a bell hanging in it. Entering the dreary hall and glancing through the open doors of many rooms, they found them poorly furnished, cold and vast. There was a chilly bareness in the place, which associated itself somehow with too much getting up by candlelight and not too much to eat. They went, the ghost and Scrooge, across the hall to a door at the back of the house. It opened before them and disclosed a long, bare, melancholy room, made barer still by lines of plain deal forms and desks. At one of these, a lonely boy was reading near a feeble fire, and Scrooge sat down upon a form and wept to see his poor, forgotten self as he used to be. The spirit touched him on the arm and pointed to his younger self, intent upon his reading. Suddenly a man in foreign garments, wonderfully real and distinct to look at, stood outside the window with an axe stuck in his belt
and leading by the bridle an ass laden with wood.
"Why, it's Ali Baba!"
Scrooge exclaimed in ecstasy.
"It's dear old honest Ali Baba. Yes, yes, I know. One Christmas time, when yonder solitary child was left here all alone, he did come, for the first time, just like that. And the Sultan's groom turned upside down by the genie. There he is upon his head. Serve him right. I'm glad of it. What business had he to be married to the princess?"
Then, with the rapidity of transition very foreign to his usual character, he said, in pity for his former self,
"Poor boy,"
and cried again. The ghost waved his hand, saying as it did so, "Let us see another Christmas." Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and more dirty. There he was, alone again, when all the other boys had gone home for their jolly holidays. He was not reading now, but walking up and down despairingly. Scrooge looked at the ghost, and with a mournful shaking of his head, glanced anxiously towards the door. It opened, and a little girl, much younger than the boy, came darting in, and putting her arms about his neck and often kissing him, addressed him as her dear, dear brother. "I have come to bring you home, dear brother," said the child, clapping her tiny hands and bending down to laugh. "To bring you home, home, home."
"Home, little Fan?" returned the boy.
"Yes,"
said the child, brimful of glee.
"Home for ever and ever. Father is so much kinder than he used to be. That home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home, and he said, 'Yes, you should,' and sent me in a coach to bring you, and you're to be a man, and I'm never coming back here. But first we're to be together all the Christmas long and have the merriest time in all the world."
"You're quite a woman, little Fan." She clapped her hands and laughed, and tried to touch his head, and being too little, laughed again, and stood on tiptoe to embrace him. Then she began to drag him in her childish eagerness towards the door, and he, nothing loath to go, accompanied her. Always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered, but she had a large heart, said the ghost.
"So she had. You're right. I will not say it, spirit, God forbid."
"She died a woman, and had, as I think, children."
"One child."
"True, your nephew." Scrooge seemed uneasy in his mind and answered briefly,
"Yes."